You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, you beautiful MFs, my beautiful MFs. I am back solo with you this week after a brief hiatus so that I could have the man I call little bro on for the second time. And since we had a break from solo episodes, there's lots to catch up on today, especially in the best movie ever. I'll do money stuff. I've got a little sports update for you, and we'll see what else comes up. I put my notes together on the flight to Medellin, which is where I'll be most of the summer. And where I am now. But we first start with funnies as usual. Palash Shah says this: what if the guy who invented umbrellas wanted to name them Brellas but hesitated? That's pretty good, right? That's pretty good. Teoki, earning his second mention on the pod here. He says, I can't believe I spent my whole life becoming good at computer only for computer to become better at computer. That's funnier when you read it with an Asian voice, but I didn't have the heart for it. You have girlfriend? You have why? Oh, you Maddie? Yep, Maddie, boo. It reminds me of 16 Candles with Dong laying on the laying out in the grass. This is one from Show Me the Data, the account Show Me the Data. It says, I'm grateful to women who hyphenate their last names because you know immediately that they're going to be a pain in the ass. This one's heartwarming, I would say. Robert Wilkinson said, 40 years ago today, I asked my childhood sweetheart, my best friend, and the most gorgeous woman I know to marry me. All three said no. Molly Wrightstuff says, met a guy recently named Jonathan who goes by Nathan. I didn't even know you could do that. Yeah, sure can. John Nathan. He can do it too. Cite Chris, C-I-T-E, Chris, says, can you die from a lack of being called Big Dog? I don't know the answer to that one, Chris, but we should probably find out, Chief. You know what I mean, bud? What say you, Pimpin'? I don't know if you can die from that or not, brother. I don't know whether to include some of these in money stuff or funnies, but that guy Greg with a bunch of numbers behind his name, he was replying to a post about Alphabet, which is the Google parent. They recently raised $80 billion by selling stock to invest in AI. I should also add Berkshire Hathaway just recently purchased $10 billion of Google stock too, which I think that's interesting because this purchase was initiated by the man who replaced Warren Buffett as CEO. They're sitting on something like $300 billion of cash. And they're starting to make moves in the technological space, which Warren Buffett didn't do a lot of, or maybe not at all, prior to his big Apple purchase in the 2010s. By the way, Buffett recently said that he sold his Apple too soon. So if you own either Apple or Google, maybe you feel a little better knowing Buffett just said that recently. But my guess is if you have Google and or Apple stock, you probably knew that already. So the post by Greg replying to the fact that Alphabet raised $80 billion for AI, he said, I bet the other 24 letters are pissed. It's a cute joke, right? Douglas Bonaparte, who I frequently mention here, he had two good ones that I'll share with you. He said this last Friday, that when the market tanked a bit, despite an excellent jobs report, which pissed Trump off and he posted about it. He said, for the last 200 years, when we get a good jobs report, the market goes up. What's going on? Something to that effect. Anyway, Douglas said, breaking, stocks crashed to levels not seen since 2 weeks ago. Yeah, the truth is funny, right? I've also seen where many of those jobs that were created that Trump was excited about actually went to temporary workers because of the World Cup. But yeah, last Friday, the market took a 2.6% dip, which is its largest since October of last year. His other one, Douglas's other one, says, if you choose a major you love, you'll never have to work a day in your life, because that field will be replaced by AI. Frank Fleming, I got a bunch of them today. Frank Fleming said, I'm not super happy about the resurgence of the word retard, but I'd happily trade everyone saying it all the time for people not murdering kids with Down syndrome. He's referring, of course, to the couple who went viral for sharing with the world that they opted for the skull crush and vacuum instead of having their baby because it had Down syndrome. But that whole deal is so disgusting, I really don't want to talk about it. Especially not during the funny part of the pod, right? Somebody named Forte, spelled like you would think, with the E in the accent, kind of like Matt Forte, the old Bears running back, formerly of Chicago Bears. He said, I warned a smoker about the detrimental effects of smoking on his lungs, and he asked what the benefit of dying with healthy lungs would be. SMB attorney says, being a law firm owner is great because I have flexibility and control to work my 150-hour work week whenever I want. Now, this is one you might need to know a little German to get. And since I know I have at least two German listeners, I'll share it for you two. Try to please everybody. And then I'll mansplain it to the rest of you. So the joke is from an account called In Lucy's Head. He says, my German girlfriend likes to rate my sexual performance on a scale of 1 to 10. Last night, we tried the back door. She kept yelling 9. And that's the best I've ever done. So in German, 9 means no, which sounds weird when you first hear it, but not as weird as that first time you walk downstairs after you spend your first night in a hotel in Munich or Berlin or wherever, and you go downstairs and the first thing you hear is, good morgen. And you're like, did she just say good morgen? Indeed she did. It's actually guten morgen, but they shorten it. Emphasis on the goo and the more, but they shorten it like we do. So, guten morgen. And in America, we probably say morning more than good morning, like morning. So, or in Spanish, instead of buenos dias or buenas tardes, they just say buenas for short, especially here in Colombians. Colombians are known for talking extra fast. So, I'm always asking, what'd they say? And they use different language to express themselves, whereas in Mexico or even in Costa Rica, which are probably the Spanish-speaking countries I've spent the most time in, there the waitress will say something like, todo bien, which loosely translates to all good or everything good. And here, they're more likely to say, como vamos por acá, which I don't know if that's more sophisticated or not. It sounds like it to me. It probably is. It's more like an Argentinian Spanish. Sounds kind of uppity relative to Mexico or Costa Rica. It's probably comparable to the way that Americans speak English versus the British or something. Next one. Spanking is just plain wrong, whether it's your girlfriend or your wife. Well, that's funny. One of my guys just asked last week about my opinion on corporal punishment. And I said that while I remember getting the belt when I was a kid, I don't really have a firm stance on it. I believe if you're in favor of it, because you've seen it work well in your life, in your upbringing, you turned out okay, I don't think it should need to be used more than once, if at all, and twice at the most. Because I think the goal there is to instill in your kid a reverent fear of God to where the threat of it would be enough going forward, so you don't need to keep doing it. But I have a girl, so this isn't something I've thought a lot about. But when put on the spot, those were my thoughts. You know, corporal punishment is outlawed in the majority of U.S. states. And over 130 countries in the world don't allow it, in public schools at least. So the U.S. is one of the few who still allow their kids to be spanked. And big surprise, it's mostly southern states that still allow it. Go figure. But it's allowable in Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, the Carolinas, and a few others. I went to a Catholic elementary school, as some of you may know, and it was something that I was always afraid of, that I'd get sent to the principal's office and get hit on the behind with a belt or a switch. I was scared of the nuns, too, which ironically enough turned out to be justified because it's hard to talk about, but it was about 8 years later, 8 years after kindergarten, one of the nuns called me out of class to tell me that I was going to be taken out of school and sent to live in another state And it's one of the most vivid memories from my childhood. Sadly, that was more painful than any physical harm a nun could have done to me. That went from funny to serious real fast. So maybe let's let that serve as a segue to more serious matters. I'll save some of these funnies for next week. But serious matters would be like the white guy in the UK who was, he was either 18 or 19, so still a teenager. He got stabbed 5 times in the heart. And Henry Nowak was his name. He was stabbed by a Sikh who was a British citizen from an immigrant family from India. And this 23-year-old Sikh who stabbed him had evidently been living in the West long enough to know that if you just make up a story about the white guy being racist, that he might get away with it. And he did get away with it. Or at least he got away with it long enough for Henry Nowak to die in handcuffs. And the Sikh family, they stuck together. The mom got there faster than the police could, and I believe they got there in 7 minutes. So the mom was right on the site right away, and she hid the weapon, evidently, the murder weapon. So the police, it's so disgusting. And this, a lot of this is hard to talk about. But when the police got a call about the worst crime you could possibly commit in the UK, I'm speaking of course, of racism, which they treat as worse than murder. So the murderer's mom gets there super fast, hides the murder weapon. I hope she does time too. I haven't seen where she's going to go to jail, but she needs to. And when the police showed up, which they did, again, 7 minutes, really quickly, when they got there, Henry Nowak told them 8 times that he'd been stabbed and that he couldn't breathe and that he was dying. In fact, he had said it so loud at times that nearby neighbors heard him and called the police themselves to say that somebody had been stabbed and was dying. But in 2026, since he was accused of racism, he bled out while wearing handcuffs. If this were the other way around, I think the whole world would be ablaze right now, don't you think? Engulfed in flames, if it had been a white guy stabbing an Indian guy. And it's not getting better. We had a migrant in Belfast trying to behead an Irishman. At first they thought he was Somalian, but it's now believed he's from Sudan, a Sudanese national. An asylum seeker, they call him. So we Westerners appreciate our leaders letting these people into our countries. I'm sure there's some benefit to us they're not telling us about. There's got to be a benefit other than giving them taxpayer dollars and helping the leaders stay in power, right? There must be. I'm guessing they'll share what that benefit is, maybe as soon as we get a break in the rapes and murders, if we get a timeout. I don't quote Andrew Tate much, but he said this: here's 10 chocolate bars, 2 of them are poison. Do you want to eat one? He said, what retard would go, well, only 20% of them kill people. I think the answer to that is those who do benefit from it by getting them on the dole and eventually voting for more taxpayer dollars. But it's more than that. They get rich from the programs set up to help them. That's why you can spend billions of dollars on a high-speed train or homelessness or food insecurity or autism. I think most of that money is just stolen. I was helping somebody understand the other day, the communists don't have a way to make money. That's why they resort to all kinds of shenanigans. If you're a government lifer with a $170,000 salary and have no business experience whatsoever, you got to get creative and exploit people, yet accuse the other side of doing that while you're doing it. Remember I told you my theory of trickle-down economics? Now that we know commies constantly project, the trickle-down thing describes what happens once the communists grab taxpayer money for their programs, after they take theirs by way of NGOs or whatever, some of that is going to trickle down to the homeless. But if you end homelessness, those programs go away. And so Johnny, Secretary of Treasury's wife, loses her $500,000 cush salary, you know, just being the vice president of an NGO. But the trickle down is what gets to the homeless after all the NGOs, of which there are, do you know how many NGOs there are in America? 1.9 million. Almost 2 million. How about that? In Nowak's case, the guy in Britain, he told police, I've been stabbed, I'm dying. And the police said, "I don't think so, mate," and read him his rights, which turned out to be his last rights. Unbelievable. I wonder if that poor guy in Ireland had a chance to tell police that he was being beheaded, so the police could tell him, "Yeah, I don't think so, mate." George Alexopoulos said this. He said, "There's no more accurate a metaphor for the West than slowly bleeding to death by the hand of barbarians while corrupt authorities tie our hands behind our back." And one of the more crazy aspects of this ordeal is because the murderer was a Sikh, he had a religious exemption from British law, which allowed him to walk around with an 8-inch knife. But good luck to white people in British trying to buy a knife for self-defense. Even buying a set of steak knives in London isn't something that you can just walk up to the counter and buy. Because there's so much knife crime, the knives are heavily regulated. So a country that was, 99.9% white people shortly after World War II, they've pretty much been conquered. Not fully, but I'm not sure what else they could do, what policies they could put in place that would more accelerate their conquering. Since 2021, about 50%, about half of babies born in the UK are not white. And this murder, of course, was kept under wraps as long as they could keep it under wraps. And my guess is it never would have come out if not for Elon saving free speech. But the guy was convicted of murder, thankfully. Eventually, I think the murder happened early December, so the process didn't take too long. And of course, he should have been sentenced to death. Did they sentence him to death? No, they did not. Hell, that might be one of the big draws for third world rapists and murderers who migrate to the UK and everywhere else in the West. It's the pansy sentences they get. They know Fruitcake Keir Starmer and the rest of the corrupt leadership, they're largely overlooking rape. They've been doing that for years with the Pakistani rape gangs, which they call Asian groomers, so as not to be mean or racist. So they soften the language, and come to think of it, we have this problem in America where a lot of Hispanics in prison for violent crimes are labeled as white. Calling Pakistanis Asian serves a similar purpose to why we would call Hispanics white. It's all political. It's done for power. We live in an era where being racist is worse than murder. And the bad guys know that. That's why they devised a plan in this Henry Nowak killing. They devised a plan, this murderous piece of shit and his brother. They called the police and said that Henry Nowak used racial slurs, and that's probably what cost him his life. As I said, he died in handcuffs. The guy who stabbed him to death, he didn't get life in prison. He got life with an asterisk, as I see it, which is how they do it there. It says in parentheses next to his sentence that he must serve a minimum of 21 years, softening the sentence, literally and literally. I met a cool guy at the Charlotte airport on Thursday when we were flying out. John was his name. Government contractor, a few years older than me. He's married with 4 boys. And we were talking about how feminine young men are nowadays and how masculine young women have become. And he was telling me that he was messing with his 9-year-old niece, asking if she had a boyfriend. And she said no. But it wasn't the kind of, like, ooh, boys are yucky that you might expect to hear from a 9-year-old. She straight up said, no, I don't have a boyfriend because the boys in my class are too soft. A 9-year-old. Unreal, huh? Matt Walsh posted this about the murder. He said, "The native people of the UK deserve to have their homeland back. We must respect indigenous culture and identity and acknowledge the deep and enduring connection that the native communities of the UK maintain with their ancestral homeland, affirming and honoring their rights and heritage. We must support decolonization efforts and acknowledge the historical harms inflicted on the native peoples of the UK and the broader indigenous community all across Western Europe and the entire Anglosphere." You know, something Helen Andrews said recently is that, I'll quote her here. She said that the more women dominate the legal system, the more justice risks becoming emotional storytelling and compassion theater instead of cold, neutral due process. And her examples were the Title IX campus courts and some of the Me Too cases where feelings trumped evidence and the procedures that we should be entitled to as Americans were put aside. She believes that when emotion replaces blind justice and impartial rules, that the rule of law is going to be weakened and the safety of everybody suffers. We all pay the price and we risk being harmed by a crazed, violent animal that they let out of prison 17 times in a row. Your risk goes way up unless you're a Hollywood leftist or a politician who has private security. The late John MacArthur said, when women take over a culture, men become weak. When men become weak, they can be conquered. He says, you're watching that happen in this country. He lived in LA. He said, as more and more women ascend to power, more and more men become weaker and weaker and weaker. And the level of vulnerability just keeps escalating. Maybe I should call this section Becoming the Third World. Huh? Schopenhauer, or however you pronounce his name, Manila. I've got a listener who corrects me on how I pronounce philosophers' names, but he said, the philosopher famously said, that the fundamental fault of women is they have no sense of justice, because he thought that they were defective in the powers of reasoning and deliberation. He believed women lie a lot more than men, and said that women perjure themselves in court a lot more than men. And you and I could debate whether what he said is true or misogynistic. Of course, he said this, what, mid-19th century? But he said it because women are the weaker sex, and so he said that nature equipped them with cunning and deception skills for a reason, and that reason would be for safety and self-preservation. Have you watched the Michael Jackson doc on Netflix yet? That jury who found him not guilty was made up of 8 women and just 4 men. I'll talk more about that documentary in a future episode. I've got too much else to talk about today. Let's talk about Austin Metcalf and the thug who stabbed him to death. He raised a bunch of money from black racists who cheer the killing of white people, regardless of the circumstances. The family raised so much money, I believe it was $600,000 they raised for his defense. But when it came time for him to hire a defense attorney, they got a court-appointed one because they couldn't afford their own attorney. Would you think they were going to hire the ghost of Johnny Cochran with all that money? No. They purchased new vehicles and moved into a gated community. You've heard me say this before, but it's never been more evident that demons live among us. This killer Carmelo Anthony, evidently he went into another team's tent at a track meet and was told to leave 15 times, but he was entitled to be wherever he wanted to be, and there's nothing you can do about it. I've come across this kind of person, I'm sure we all have, this super entitled. When I was in college, we had a black dude on our baseball team that we recruited from Kansas, and one time coach asked him to go grab a bucket of balls from the outfield, and he turned around to some of us standing there, and he said, I ain't going to fetch no balls. My people have been struggling for 400 years, and you're going to ask me to go pick up the balls? Nope. And that's something I'll never forget. Obviously, I couldn't believe he said that. I ran track only in 8th grade, so I don't really know how sacred a tent is, but I'm told it's comparable to a dugout or a locker room where, you know, if another player just came and plopped himself in our dugout, that's not going to fly. And you would expect your leader to step up, which I assume Austin Metcalf was kind of the leader. But yeah, you just can't plop yourself on the opposing team's bench. And when he was told, this Carmelo fellow was told repeatedly to leave, he said, F all y'all. And Metcalf told him that he wasn't going to fight him. And the killer, Carmelo, had his hand in his bag saying, touch me and see what happens. And sadly, as we know, he wasn't bluffing. He had brought a knife to a track meet, and he pulled it out and stabbed Metcalf in the heart. I guess we'll have to wait and see if there are riots once he's found guilty. Let's hope not. It should be noted in a post-OJ world that there were no black jurors selected for the jury in this case, because the ones that were in the jury pool, you know, prospective jurors, they admitted that they couldn't be impartial. They couldn't, quote, put another brother in jail. That's what one of them said, at least. So I do believe he'll be found guilty. I believe there were 4 black teammates of Metcalf, including the coach, who was also black. They testified against the murderer. So it does look like Carmelo Anthony will spend his life in prison. Let's hope so. something I've talked about in the past is women's need historically for men, and they don't need them as much anymore. And that reason being, I've talked about it historically in terms of police forces are only a few hundred years old. But did you know that back before the 18th century, they didn't waste people's money on pieces of shit like this guy who murdered Metcalf? They put him behind bars only long enough for them to be sentenced, and then they'd be either exiled or, depending on the severity of the crime, they just executed him, put a bullet in their head, or hung him, usually. But they didn't house and feed a murderer for the rest of his life, allowing him a long life to make friends in prison and play cards and read books in his bed and do bench press, getting all swole. The British, they would ship their convicts to the American colonies prior to the Revolution. And then after the Revolution, they sent them down under to Australia. But what we do, what do we do? Our prison system thinks they're going to reform everybody. Like, they think they can take a monster and turn him into a productive citizen. But that's damn near impossible, and I think we need to give up on that idea. You know, that's why they call them penitentiaries. It means penitence, or to repent. That is all from the Enlightenment. Real enlightened, right? Progressive might be another word for it. So progressive that if Metcalf had done this in Norway, in Scandinavia, Norway specifically, the maximum sentence would be 21 years. Not good. These compassionate folks are harming us or putting us at great risk. Let's talk best movie ever, because there's a lot to share. I saw where Jill Biden said that she was very worried about her husband during the debate with Trump. The one where he said, we beat Medicaid. She said that she thought he might be having a stroke. Of course, she doesn't realize what she's saying or admitting to in saying that she led the elder abuse and the cover-up for 4 years. Perhaps the biggest scandal, biggest cover-up in presidential history, as our commander-in-chief was mentally incapacitated. Can't think of a bigger scandal than that, unless you count spying on your political opponent's campaign or trying to portray your opposition as a traitor to the country by colluding with the enemy, or having the activist wing of your party fund neo-Nazis and the KKK via the SPLC, so you can put on a theater production to include tiki torches and bulging veins, which sadly resulted in death. Also, you can say your opponent thought those people you funded were fine people. And that's the reason you decided to run for the highest office in the land. Not to mention all the other stuff they funded, like E. Jean Carroll. Did you see the Department of Justice is investigating her? I'll talk about that in a minute. But speaking of the four-year cover-up, shortly after I watched him, Biden, I'm talking about. Well, I'm sorry, Jill Biden. Shortly after I watched her say what she did about him in the debate, that she thought he was having a stroke, she then went on to, in front of an adoring crowd, to say that he did so good and he answered all the questions and what'd the other guy do? And then she pointed the microphone to the crowd so she could lead a chant saying, lie! All the other guy did was lie! Joe did so good and all the other guy did was lie. Is that the truth? It was such a weird thing to live through. From Charlottesville to him being forced to drop out so his DEI VIP could be installed. All while confessing they were going to end democracy. By confessing, I mean accuse the other side of doing that. She even led a 4 more years chant. Real good, Doc. Maybe a stroke helping him off the 4-inch stage. Remember, it was a tiny little stage. He needed help getting down. And a cancer that spread to his bones. Who knew? Who knows when they found that out? But yeah, 4 more years. That's a power-hungry doctor for you. I wouldn't trust her in a lab coat. How come we haven't heard anything about his cancer lately? Was that also not real? I don't know. But it's so upsetting that he and Scott Adams, you know, Scott Adams didn't announce that he had stage 4 cancer until Biden did, because they had the same cancer. And Scott Adams was planning on offing himself by way of, what do they call that, euthanasia. They have some program in California, evidently, where you can off yourself if you're in a lot of pain or dying of cancer. And that was May of last year. And Adams, despite having the sharpest mind of anybody around, he unfortunately went first, saying in his final letter that his body gave out before his mind did. But Biden seems to be suffering from deterioration of both. He walks around with that rigor mortis look. But the E. Jean Carroll thing, let's talk about that. So the DOJ is investigating E. Jean Carroll. I think they're focusing more on how the lawsuit was funded, the lawsuit that won her $87 million, because she said she couldn't remember who funded it. So she told the Trump attorney, Alina Haba, this was in 2022, she said that she received no outside funding, nor could she remember the date or the month or the year of the alleged rape. She didn't know when it occurred. She also accused 21 other men of sexual assault through the years. In her defense, though, it would be hard to keep track of when all 21 occurred. It kind of makes you wonder if she's ever had consensual sex, or if maybe after the 18th time, you know, did you make any adjustments? Like maybe thought about not putting yourself in a situation where you could get raped a 19th time? I don't know. I'm weird, I guess. She did have what her attorneys called a refreshed recollection, though, regarding the funding of her lawsuit. And she finally admitted that it was the NGO tied to the co-founding fatty of LinkedIn, which was, of course, acquired by Bill Gates' company. They might be the two most mentioned in the Epstein files. A couple of old sloppy fellas who might know a thing or two about being rapey, allegedly. But yeah, this crazy woman accused Trump of raping her in the 90s. Used a Law and Order episode almost verbatim to tell the story. And as I said, she couldn't recall the year, much less the month or the date that the rape occurred. The way she said it, there was flirtation that turned into rape in a department store dressing room. And she came with all this, by the way, on November 22nd of 2022, which was the first day that she was able to do that under this new law that was passed under Governor Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York. She signed this bill that allowed for what was called a one-year look back. So that extended the statute of limitations on this kind of crime. So that allowed her to look back 30 years. So they trumped up a lot of stuff in New York. And it came after Trump announced in a speech at Mar-a-Lago, this was November 15th, so exactly 9 days before. That was when Trump announced that he was going to run for president again. So just days after that. New Yorkers, they're not a fan of their hometown boy from Queens. He's got the wrong politics to just be roaming around free and thinking he's going to run for office. That was the main issue. I'm sure they would have left him alone if not for that. Anderson Cooper had her on. E. Jean Carroll had her on his show. And he had to cut her off when she started talking about rape being sexy. So I'm glad they're going after her. Let's do that Blasey Ford lady next, huh? And every other lying lowlife trying to put innocent men in a cage for the rest of their life. I think that pisses me off as much as anything. The woman who derailed Trevor Bauer's career, the Duke lacrosse stripper. Now that the future is no longer female and men aren't afraid to call a woman crazy, let's get some of these laws enacted for these women who wrongly accuse men of rape. Because that is some evil, evil shit. Here's what I'm thinking. First-time offender, first-time lying about being raped, minimum 30 years behind bars. Why 30 years? Because they need to be in there at least until the age at which most guys wouldn't want to do that to them. Or at least till an age where it'd be less believable. The age demo of the rape victims. Second offense, I don't know, what's the female equivalent of castration? Remove some of her lady parts? No ovary for you? No ovary for you. Why did I do that in an Asian accent that time? It could be because I've been interacting with quite a bit of Asians lately. We had a Chinese sales lady when we bought that vehicle I told you about a few weeks ago. And she told me about these patches for my neck that I can only buy in Chinatown. And so I went and I bought a pack of them, and they work so much better. For those of you in pain out there, they work so much better than Biofreeze or Salon Paws and all the rest of them that I've tried. Believe me, I've tried them all. I put these Chinese heaters on. They provide a lot of heat. I went back and bought about $80 worth of them. They come four in a pack. And what I'm hoping is that they last me all summer until I get back to Houston. But they're real good. They burn my skin kind of. So I try to take days off and use Biofreeze. But they work really well. I'm wearing one right now. But for women who make up stories about being sexually assaulted, at a minimum, they should do the exact same amount of time in jail that the man would have gotten if he had actually raped them. Since common sense is back, I would settle for that. Why aren't we doing that? On a more positive note, I do have positive stuff to share with you today. Yale is reinstating requiring students, or prospective students, I should say, those applying to get in, they're going to require them to take the SAT and or ACT after their six-year love affair with race communism. Who watched Trump's interview with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press? Speaking of calling a woman crazy when they're acting crazy, I did, and I loved it. He called the network and Welker crooked, and she says, I'm not crooked. And Trump says, you're either crooked or you're stupid. Yes, we need more of exactly that. The days of letting women get away with everything are no longer. And he's leading the way, and I'm proud of him for that. It's the kind of leader we need if we're going to bring back common sense. I saw online where somebody said Obama never ran away in the middle of an interview. And this guy, Oilfield Rando, he's a pretty good account on X, he said, when has a man ever walked away from a blowjob midway through? Yeah, they don't treat Obama and Trump the same. Oh, and then the Scott Pelley thing. I got to talk about that, right? Since I've talked about 60 minutes of propaganda more than once. He was the worst one. The worst propagandist, I thought. Well, he and Leslie Stahl. Pelley is one of the oldest communist theater kids and thinks he's the best actor among them. So he lost his job for being insubordinate when Barry Weiss came in, who I call Toady for reasons that those of you who listen to a lot of podcasts will know. She was on Rogan and called somebody a Toady, and Rogan said, what's a Toady? And she said, I don't know. And they asked Jamie to look it up, I think. So anyway, she took over and he thinks she doesn't have any experience. And what he's been saying since he got fired, everything he says is ridiculous. And it's the weirdest thing to hear him say that he's not biased and they don't think they have any bias. And I would not believe it. I wouldn't believe my ears listening to him if I hadn't encountered commies like him my entire adult life. Thankfully, I've worked for him. I've worked with him. And they truly do not think they're biased. Like, they will tell you to go to this website for objective, as an objective source, and you read it, and it is, like, the board of directors is Bill Ayers or whatever, you know, the Weather Underground guy who was doing domestic terrorism in the 70s. It's the weirdest thing. And so, like Welker, he's either biased or real dumb, and it might be that. Pelley might just be real dumb. It's always hard to tell if actors are smart or not. The ones who aren't smart, they typically won't do long-form interviews. The ones who are, do. So I'm thinking, I've seen Edward Norton on Rogan. He was smart. Hugh Jackman was on Tim Ferriss' podcast one time. I learned a lot from him. But there's a reason a lot of the actors and actresses won't do Rogan. Kamala Lama 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 wouldn't do Rogan. And she said it was because of a scheduling conflict. But you and I know better. She's not going to be able to get through 3 hours with Rogan. Yeah, Norton and Jackman, I learned a lot from those guys. But there are some actors. Robert De Niro, obviously a dummy. Commie Sean Penn, I don't know if he sounds about as smart as Alex Soros. Who else? Mark Ruffalo, total dummy. Spencer Pratt, you want to talk about the LA mayoral race? He was gaining ground so that he could make the runoff. He had to finish in the top two, and that dude was on fire for a while there. No pun intended. That is until the lady who was in third place, who gave a tearful concession speech apologizing for poor performance in the race. She made a comeback. She did incredibly well with the mail-in votes that came in the days after Election Day. Because in California, they're not capable of telling you who the winner is on Election Day, like so many countries do that are way bigger than California. California's population is roughly 40 million, give or take. Brazil's bigger than that. They can do it. India, They only have a billion and a half people or so. They can do it. Mexico, Japan, Indonesia, all those countries can tell you right away who won, but not California. And unless they get a Nick Shirley and they're investigating, that is if they don't ban him from the state. I believe they're trying to do that. But who's going to investigate? A CNN correspondent? Are they going to call the mayor's office to ask if there's any election fraud going on? I say that because that's what they did after Shirley investigated Leering Centers in Minnesota. They just called and said, hi, are you a legitimate business? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Kristen Welker, you think she's going to investigate? No. She's going to say, show me the evidence, as if the CIA and the NSA don't have ways of covering their tracks. It's really tough to crack a one-party state, but credit to Pratt for trying. I mean, at least he exposed some of the ridiculousness. But at least they failed in turning the country into a one-party rule, right? Although they would have, and it's easy to see how it happens in third world countries, how easily they can trump up charges and put their political opponent behind bars. But it's not so easy to do here in America. And Trump is hard to kill, but they're still trying, I'm sure. Mr. Pratt, he had a thought that he shared that I thought was worth sharing with you because it fits into what I tell you all the time, which is that most people, they don't know what we're up against. Global communism. What do you think climate change was about? It wasn't just anti-Americanism, although that might have been its core. But for global communism to succeed, what do you think has to happen to America? But we'll save that for another day. Pratt's post. Oh, I was going to share Pratt's post. So he says, when I was in my 20s, I was on a TV show. When Karen Bass, the current mayor of LA, now running for re-election, when Karen Bass was in her 20s, she was training in terrorist tactics and guerrilla warfare with communists in Cuba. Back when the LA Times was still in LA and used to tell the truth. And he shares an article from the LA Times from November 28, 1983. And he highlights the part of the article that says, in those documents, intelligence officers accused one plaintiff of making death threats against police officers, accused another of fostering racial strife, and contended that a third plaintiff traveled to Cuba to learn guerrilla warfare. Plaintiff Karen Bass, according to a 1973 intelligence document provided by the Times, or provided to the Times, traveled to Cuba with the 6th contingent of the Vinceramos Brigade. The brigade trains revolutionary-prone Americans in terrorist tactics and guerrilla warfare while claiming to harvest sugarcane. Bass, characterized as a brigade leader, returned from Cuba to the USA, bringing back propaganda literature. Yeah, you got to know what we're up against, whether it's Bernie honeymooning in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. You know who else honeymooned in a communist country? Bill de Blasio, former mayor of New York City. He was warming up the seat for full-blown Mamdani communism. Or Tim Walz, he visited communist China 15 times. Speaking of gay men, last week we talked about how men lie on their dating profile. If you listened to Michael and I last week, Michael was saying that he was told that if men on their dating profile, he heard this from his then fiance or then girlfriend, I guess, that if men were 5'6 or 5'7, they say that they're 5'10, that was the height demographic that lied the most. They were 5'6 or 7, they would say they were 5'10. But get this, did you know that men who are 5'5 or less are 70% more likely to be gay? That's a true stat. Do you know how tall the average American man is? Any guesses? Think of it. 5'9". I happen to believe that women's desire for taller men, I think that's at its peak in human history, or at least in my lifetime. And my opinion is that it's mimetic, as that's one of the things that stands out to me when I'm traveling is just how mimetic women are. Men are too, but women are way more mimetic, which just means that they copy each other. So if your friends are desiring men, if they have a minimum height requirement of 6 feet, then yep, pretty soon it'll spread like duck lips, which I'm convinced, I don't know about you, being in Colombia, I'm starting to see the lips everywhere. I think that started from girls making the duck face, and then they wanted to have a better duck face, like more protruding lips, I guess, and it's so disgusting. What's interesting to me about the height requirement that so many women have now, what it tells me is the same thing I thought when I dabbled in the apps way back when. Like, it's 1,000 times better to meet somebody in person. You are going to skip the line from above all the app swipers and likely end up with somebody you wouldn't have matched with in 100 years on apps. And I say that because I know from personal experience. It might apply to everybody I dated after 30, and definitely applied to the most important one, which, because most of them would have fallen outside the age range, and I would have probably fallen outside the height range. So, you know, if you think you're selective about, like, oh, you think you'd marry a 10 if she just based on looks, to, regardless of how annoying she was or neurotic or whatever, but if you're like me, you, once somebody opens their mouth, you can eliminate them almost immediately. Well, with women, it's even worse. Like, they need to get to know you, and that's going to be the attraction, whether you can make them laugh or whether you're smart or whatever. So they're willing to, I think, forfeit those 5 inches to you sub-6-footers, you 5'7 guys, if they get to know you first. So put on some platforms and get out there and say, hi, I'm Johnny. All right, let's do some money stuff. And I'll start with a couple of quotes. Gerwinder's one of them. You know me, I like Gerwinder. He said, if everything is cheap and anything can be done by AI, social status will be determined not by how much you have, but how much you can do without. Speaking of Trump, who I mentioned a minute ago, he's trying to get a $250 bill going. Did you hear that? It's going to be a commemorative thing to celebrate America's 250th birthday. And I don't think it's going to be used like a Hunsky, for example, like a $100 bill. It'll be more like a $2 bill, which would be cool to have, but so cool that you don't want to spend it when you get one. I remember when I was a kid, I had two $2 bills in my top drawer for probably 10 years. And you don't want to put it in the bank either, because then it just becomes digits on a screen. You don't have the tangible $2 bill anymore. But it'd be a cool thing to keep forever, I guess, and pass down to your heirs. You could tell the grandkids what it was like living during the best movie ever. S&P 500 earnings are projected to be 25% higher this year, which can be attributed almost entirely to earnings per share, gains in earnings per share in the big tech sector, the big tech companies. The tech sector is up 47% over the last 9 weeks. That's wild. Which is the biggest 9 weeks it's ever had. Even bigger than 1999, which we now know as the dot-com bubble. Maybe most surprising this year is what emerging markets are doing. So are you diversified into emerging markets? Because after years of underperformance, analysts expect a huge year, with expected earnings for the MSCI Emerging Markets Index climbing nearly 50% to record highs. Mr. Bellello, who I cite often, he follows the MSCI. I actually follow ticker VWO. It's a Vanguard fund. That's where I get my emerging markets fix. It's a Vanguard ETF. It's one of those I follow on my Apple Stocks app. The top countries represented in that VWO fund, if you're curious, or Taiwan. They're probably about a third of the fund. So it's heavy Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC, and other big tech over there on that island just east of China, followed by China. So you get some Tencent and Alibaba, and then India, Brazil, South Africa, Saudi Arabia. There's some Mexico in there, some Thailand, but those, the Thailand, Malaysia, those kind of countries only make up about 1-2% of the fund. But it gives you good Asia exposure, since roughly 2/3 of the countries in the fund are out east. So we want to diversify. What does it take to be wealthy in America? This is a cool little survey by Charles Schwab, taken in 2023. So it's a few years old, but they surveyed how much of a net worth you'd need to feel comfortable in America, and the average net worth you'd need to be considered wealthy. So two separate questions. and I'll first share with you, I'll do how much net worth you'd need to feel comfortable first. So here goes. In San Francisco, you would need $1.7 million. LA and San Diego, $1.5 million. New York, $1.2 million. DC, $1 million. Atlanta, $729,000. Phoenix, $653,000. Big D, Dallas, $820,000. So I was going in descending order there, but Dallas is $820,000. And the amount you would need to feel comfortable where I'm from, in H-Town, baby, is $606,000. Now, for how much you'd need to be considered wealthy, in San Francisco, 4.7 mil, LA and San Diego, 3.5 mil, New York, 3.3 million, Phoenix, 2.4 million, Atlanta, 2.3, Chicago and Dallas are also 2.3. It's kind of surprising, right, that Chicago and Dallas you'd need the same amount of money to be considered wealthy? That's got to be attributed entirely to the pretentious nature of Big D, but I don't know. In Houston, H-Town, baby, to be considered wealthy according to this Charles Schwab survey, what do you think? Answer, 2.1 million. So just over 2 million. The median net worth of Americans is 121,000. So half have more than 121,000, half have less. The top 1% in terms of wealth, you'd need to have just over $11 million. But overall, to be considered wealthy in America, if I averaged out the 12 biggest cities, most of the ones I just mentioned, you'd need 2.2 million. I know some of you rich MFs out there are already there, and to you, I say good work, keep stacking. Let me share a personal money story with you. Since, you know, gamblers and stock pickers only tend to tell you about their winners, their big winners. Well, I've got a loser story for you. And I might cushion it with a winner story so as not to feel like a total loser. But this is one of those loser stories I'll remember the rest of my life. And hopefully my share in this will, I want you to know, but I'll preface this with what I always say when I talk about investing on the pod is, do not take advice, investing advice from some podcast or overseas. That is not a smart move. That said, a few weeks ago, when I bought a new vehicle, new to me anyway, and I spent a chunk of cash on this vehicle purchase, what I did was pretty severely depleted what investors would call my dry powder, which is cash kept on the sidelines for when there's blood in the streets. So you want to hopefully have some cash so that you can invest when there's blood in the streets, when stocks are cut in half or whatever. So to replenish my cash stash, I decided what I would do is sell an individual stock. And I decided it was going to be Uber, which I've owned since 2020, and ServiceNow, which I've had much longer than that. And I don't recommend those stocks. Don't say, oh man, overseas owns these, let me go get them. No, because remember, when somebody recommends a stock, which I didn't just do, the one thing they won't tell you is when to sell. That person likely will not be around to tell you when to sell. So just telling you that I own some, and both have done well. And so right before I pulled the trigger, though, I was about to sell one of them, I decided to ask Grok. I wanted to know Grok's opinion. And in so doing, I plugged in a few other stocks that have done extremely well. And I asked which one or two of these four stocks would you sell? And Grok acted like this was the easiest no-brainer question that I had ever asked him. What Grok said was the most volatile of the four that I mentioned was Rocket Lab. And since he said I was up 180% on it, and it'd be a long-term capital gains situation because I've held it longer than a year, and because he said it was volatile relative to the others that I mentioned, Uber, ServiceNow, and another one, he said that I should sell Rocket Lab. So after considering all the info Grok provided, I let him convince me to sell Rocket Lab. And at that time, mid-May, it was $79 a share. Would you believe the very next day, Rocket Lab, ticker symbol RKLB, was up 35% the very next day after I sold it. And over the past 2 or 3 weeks since I sold most of my Rocket Lab stock, it's up It's, I don't know, it got up to $149 a share. So it nearly doubled in 2 or 3 weeks. And so that's a story I'll never forget. And I decided I was going to let Grok have it. I said, man, you told me to sell Rocket Lab a few weeks ago instead of ServiceNow or Uber. I can't believe you did that to me. You want to know what Grok says? I screenshotted it. He said, haha, damn, timing can be brutal in this market. I don't have a perfect memory of every chat, but if I suggested prioritizing selling Rocket Lab over Uber or ServiceNow 2 weeks ago, that clearly didn't age well in the short term. Let's look at what actually happened. And then he goes into how Rocket Lab has absolutely skyrocketed. And he says that it's benefiting from the coming SpaceX IPO and that it's now up over 100% year to date and hundreds of percent over the past year, which I knew all this. And then he said Uber's been much quieter, hovering around $70 to $72 a share with some weekly dips, but that it's down year to date. He says it's been more stable, but without the explosive upside of Rocket Lab. Yeah, obviously. Captain Obvious Grok, ServiceNow, at the time Grok was telling me this, was around $100 to $108 a share. And he said it was showing volatility and down from prior highs, with more modest movement compared to Rocket Lab's moonshot. So he wasn't making me feel any better. Then he explains, Rocket Lab caught the perfect wave of positive catalysts in the space and defense sector. Stocks like this can move fast on news, momentum, and retail slash institutional flows. Then he gave me some key takeaways, saying markets are forward-looking and unpredictable. What looks like the safest or most overvalued name on one day can become the biggest winner shortly after due to new contracts, hype, or sector rotation. I aim for balanced reasoning based on valuation, growth prospects, risks, and macro at the time. But no one nails every call, especially over short periods like 2 weeks. Hindsight is 20/20. If you still hold Rocket Lab, congrats on the run. Now it's about whether you take some profits, rebalance, or let it ride given the high valuation and volatility. Space stocks can give back gains quickly too. I'm not a financial advisor, and this isn't advice, but, well, you know what? Let me save that. Let me tell you that Rocket Lab is now down to about 111 a share at time of recording. So it's dropped from 149 to 111. So Grok knows what he's talking about. You know, now is just a snapshot in time. And 6 months from now or 6 years from now, Grok might have made the right call. Because it's not like I was going to sell one of those otherwise. I was selling them to replenish my cash reserve. But let's see. So I asked Grok, I said, can you make it up to me? And Grok says, ha ha, fair enough. I owe you one, with a laughing emoji. And he says, my Rocket Lab call didn't pan out the way that I framed it. And then he said, if you're still interested in those stocks, Uber, ServiceNow, and Rocket Lab, he says, stick with the winner. And then he tells me that maybe I want to lock in more gains in Rocket Lab or take profits and let the rest ride the space wave. It's high risk, high reward, he said. And then he told me to look at ASTS, which I know I have friends who own ASTS and have done really, really well with it. And Grok also said to consider space ETFs for space diversification. So, yeah, I think he's saying that because he knows I'll jump his ass about individual stock recommendations. He's erring on the ETF side, which is, of course, a broader diversification. And then he asked me, what are you holding now? Let's turn this around. So at least he wanted to make it right. But I'm a Texan, and as you know, there's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, and it says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. But in fairness to Grok, as I said, a stock price is just a snapshot in time, and since I plan to hold for a long time, it's easy to see he might be right. So I lost some wealth. But let me tell you what Capaxis says about wealth. I saved a quote that he said, that he shared that I liked. It says, the single greatest source of wealth is between your ears. And the brutal asymmetry is that people will drop thousands of dollars on a depreciating asset like a car. We're all guilty of that, right? It's hard to get around in America without a car. But he says, we'll drop thousands on a car and not a cent or an hour on the one appreciating asset we carry everywhere. Pretty good. But that ain't us for the most part, right? We're constant learners, autodidacts. I know you are. You wouldn't be here learning along with me. How about a sports update? The NBA Finals, the road team has won every game, right? So the Knicks went to San Antonio, 1-2, and then the Knicks went into, the Knicks won in San Antonio, and then the Spurs went and won game 3. So it's 2-1 with Knicks leading. That game this last Monday was played at Madison Square Garden. The cheapest seat in the nosebleed section ranged from $5,000 to $9,000. So they're lucky they got a good game and not a 30-point blowout, which we've seen a lot of so far in the NBA playoffs. Lower-level seats were a minimum $15,000, and the best courtside seats were just over $200,000 a seat. Now, these are resale prices from sites like StubHub. I sat in nosebleed seats one time in my life. It was Roger Clemens' debut for the Astros. I sat in the very top row of what was then called Minute Maid, and I'll never do that again. Not with HD TVs. I mean, I would much rather watch from the couch than use binoculars to see what's going on. And I definitely wouldn't pay $5,000 for a nosebleed seat to see anything that I could also see on TV. I mean, I could understand if it was 1908, but we have HD TVs and comfortable couches. And what are you paying for? To high-five strangers if you go sit in the nosebleeds? That's about the only benefit. The Chicago Bears, as I mentioned, are no longer in Chicago. They're moving to Hammond, Indiana. But they're saying that might not happen until the 2030s. A lot of people are blaming their politicians. But they're keeping the name Chicago Bears. So people are kind of making a big deal about this. But Hammond is only, I think, a 25-minute drive from Chicago, I read. So they're basically just moving to the burbs. But the complaining about the politicians, the conservative types are saying that if they hadn't spent $2.5 billion accommodating migrants, but I don't know, we'll never know. The only thing that's constant in life is change. So they're going to have to get used to the Bears no longer being there. That only constant in life is change. That's a lesson I'm thankful to have learned very early. I was 11, to be exact. Let's talk about the NFL a bit. There was anywhere from 35 to 50 NFL players arrested in the past year. That's 3% of the league. For everything from DUI to domestic violence, strangling your girlfriend, gun charges. That Darren Lee fellow, the former NFL linebacker, is facing a first-degree murder charge. But the NFL player getting the most controversy is New York Giants quarterback Jackson Dart, who is guilty of introducing the president at an event. Remember how pissed people got when Drew Brees did a PSA with Obama? No? It wasn't a big deal? It's an honor to do something like that for the president of the United States? Yeah, I was thinking about if I had been asked to do that for Obama, I definitely would have. Although Biden, I don't know about, if I'm being honest, because Obama, for all his faults, there are some things about him that are respectable. His ability to make people faint when he speaks, and not a lot of people can do that. Trump hasn't done that to anybody, as far as I know. And Biden, Obama's daughters seemed like they turned out all right. But Biden, his stutter doesn't bother me, but I'd need to see a redeeming quality before I introduced him. Let's finish on a positive note. I've got a kid say the darndest things. We were having coffee the other morning at this place called Mi Hija Mia, and they've got the best flat whites. In fact, I met a friend this morning, a new friend that I met here in El Poblado. He and I met for coffee there this morning, and I'm going to have him on the pod. He's a really smart guy, really fun to talk to, very smart. We were talking about being famous, my daughter and I, and I don't remember how it came up, but my five-year-old asked if I was famous, and I said, no, not even close. I said, if I were famous, we'd have security with us all the time. And then I asked her who she believed was the most famous person in the world, and she thought about it, and she says, God. And I said, ooh, that's good. That might be right. Who's second most famous? And she said, Jesus. I said, okay, then who? She said, like somebody who lives right now? Santa Claus. Another good one. I said, okay, if not for God, Jesus, or Santa Claus, who is the most famous person in the world? And she goes, she really thought about it, and she goes, Mrs. Claus. Yeah. Thank y'all for tuning in. I welcome your feedback. If I got something wrong, I want you to let me know. Or if you agree with everything I've said, you can let me know that too. Y'all have a great summer, and I'll talk back at you soon. God bless.